Hello and welcome to World News. Our top story, Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip for a second day after the end of its week-long truce with the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Fresh Israeli strikes have targeted residential buildings as well as areas where Palestinians are taking shelter. Israeli warplanes and tanks have attacked over 400 targets, including a refugee camp in the city of Deir Abala and three mosques in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The chief of Gaza's European hospital says the health facility is unable to provide medical services due to the overwhelming number of casualties. Videos from Khan Yunis also show Al-Nasser hospital overwhelmed with injured Palestinians, including children. According to UNICEF, Gaza is once again the most dangerous place in the world to be a child. Israel's resumed bombardment has killed at least 240 Gazans so far. That's in addition to the over 15,000 people, mostly women and kids, killed prior to the ceasefire, which ended about 31 hours ago. And now Hamas says Israel and the U.S. are responsible for the expiration of the ceasefire in Gaza.
We blame the failure on two sides, the Israeli and American sides. It was clear yesterday that the Israeli side wants to go back to fighting, as several ideas were put forward by mediators, and we accepted three of them. And despite that, the Israeli side said no, no, no every time.
Hamdan said the U.S. has given the green light to Israel to resume its atrocities in Gaza. However, he said that Hamas is ready to respond to any serious efforts of mediation to cease the aggression. The spokesman also reiterated that Israel's military captives in Gaza will only be handed over once all Palestinian prisoners are freed. Now, there are currently over 8,000 Palestinian prisoners held in the regime's jails, and nearly 3,000 were arrested since the regime's onslaught began on Gaza on October 7th. A UNICEF spokesman in Gaza says the Al-Nasser hospital is overwhelmed by wounded children. James Elder says inaction by influential countries is allowing Israel to kill the children of Gaza.
The ceasefire is over. We can already hear the bombing, and I'm at a hospital. There was a hit about 50 meters from here. This is the biggest still functioning hospital in Gaza. It's at 200% capacity. Yes, this is a hospital. The health system here is overwhelmed. This hospital simply cannot take more children with the wounds of war. There are children everywhere. These children are sleeping. There was a bomb literally 50 metres from here. I cannot overstate how the capacity has been reduced of hospitals in the last 7 weeks. We cannot see more children with the wounds of war, with the burns, with the shrapnel littering their body, with the broken bones. Inaction by those with influence is allowing the killing of children. This is a war on children.
Clearly, words, clearly pleas from the world do not make a difference on those who have the power to stop the killing, the maiming of children. So let's at least look at the damage being done. This is Ahmed. He's three. Yeah. Ahmed's favourite sport, football. Ahmed's right foot amputated because of the destruction that caused to his house when family members were killed just a few weeks ago. The bombing has started again now. We cannot, in all good conscience, allow this war on children to continue. We cannot allow more children in Gaza to suffer as Ahmed, beautiful eyes, still face, still terrified with a look of a memory and something he will now have to learn to live with. It has to stop.
Now, resumption, that is, of Israel's brutal aggression against Gaza has drawn widespread condemnation, with the UN Human Rights Chief describing it as catastrophic.
You've just received a statement from the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights that I'll read out now. The resumption of hostilities in Gaza is catastrophic. We urge all parties and states with influence over them to redouble efforts immediately to ensure a ceasefire on humanitarian and human rights grounds.
The spokesperson stressed that as an occupying power, Israel is required under international law to ensure Palestinians access to basic needs such as food and water. The UN chief Antonio Guterres also regretted the resumption of strikes and hopes that a ceasefire can be reached. Head of the Red Cross said renewed attacks bring Gazans back to what he described as a nightmarish situation Robert Mardini warned that Gaza is in a very precarious state and civilians have nowhere safe to go. UNICEF also appealed for a lasting ceasefire and said inaction on Gaza is approval of the killing of children. UN agencies stressed that more attacks will lead to nothing more than more carnage. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it's hit several Israeli military targets in the northern parts of occupied territories. Hezbollah said it struck and damaged targets with, quote, appropriate weapons, leaving casualties. Group said its attacks are in response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, Israel shelled several targets in southern Lebanon that have resulted in the deaths of at least three civilians. The area there along the Lebanese southern border has frequently witnessed exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and Israel since the 8th of October. That's a day after Palestinian resistance forces launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against Israel. Pro-Palestinian rallies continue throughout the world on a daily basis, demanding an end to Israeli war on Gaza. In the U.S., dozens of protesters gathered outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., calling for a ceasefire. Protesters shouted anti-Israeli slogans and called for an end to the Israeli occupation of Palestine. People in the Lebanese city of Sidon also took to the streets in solidarity with Palestinians. They called for a halt to the Israeli aggression. Meanwhile, in the Jordanian capital, Amman, hundreds of protesters carried banners reading, "Resistance is our choice." The rallies came after the resistance movement Hamas called for demonstrations across the world on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in solidarity with Palestinians.
Crowds of Yemeni protesters rallied in the streets of the capital Sana'a, reaffirming their staunch support for Palestinians against the Israeli occupying enemy.
The masses of Yemeni people who came out today confirmed the continuation of our full support for our brothers in Palestine. This includes the recent efforts until the liberation of Palestine and the eradication of the Zionist enemy.
Protesters also expressed their readiness to support the Palestinians at all costs and provide the Palestinian resistance with money and men until decisive victory over the Israeli regime is achieved.
The people came out today like a flood to confirm that we are returning to the war with the Zionist entity. We are also here to direct a message to the Zionist enemy that its return to the war means that the end of its existence, the end of this entity, and the end of this enemy.
According to Yemeni military officials, Yemen is expecting that the U.S. and other Western powers would try to take advantage of the Red Sea. The officials have warned that any act of hostility by Israel or the United States will be met with unprecedented force.
We already knew that the U.S. would try to move in on us from the Red Sea, and for that we have prepared tremendously. We have prepared for them in a number of locations and in a number of fields. Our armed forces are prepared. Our Navy forces are prepared.
The U.S. Department of Defense has sent several warnings to Ansar Allah movement not to get involved in tensions in Palestine amid a brutal Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. However, as the leader of Ansar Allah, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, stated, Yemen is not the nation that takes its orders from the U.S. The resumption of Israeli airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip means the Yemeni army will resume its military efforts against the Israeli regime by launching drones and ballistic missiles against the Israeli entity. This also includes the capture or seizure of any Israeli-linked ship in the Red Sea. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
A pro-Palestine activist has self-immolated himself outside the Israeli consulate in the U.S. state of Georgia during a protest against renewed Israeli bloodshed in Gaza. Police in the city of Atlanta have not disclosed the identity of the person who held a Palestinian flag just before setting himself ablaze on Friday. He is now said to be in critical condition. A security guard who attempted to intervene was also injured. In a press conference, the local police chief referred to the incident as an act of extreme political protest. Israel resumed its airstrikes on Gaza after a week-long pause under a truce deal that came to an end on Friday. Iran's foreign ministry has dismissed anti-Tehran claims in a terrorism report issued by the U.S. State Department, saying that the report lacks credibility. Ministry spokesperson Nasser Kanani said that these annual reports are prepared to threaten countries opposed to Washington, and they have no bearing on nations' sincere efforts to fight terror. He said that such biased reports, rather, shed more light on the U.S. government's double standards. He noted it is lost on no one that Washington is behind the creation, funding, training, and spearheading terrorist groups, including Daesh. He also accused the U.S. of sheltering terrorists and creating a safe haven for terrorist leaders. Kanani explained the U.S. is a main accomplice in genocide against Palestinians in Gaza by offering unflinching support for, quote, the Israeli regime state terrorism and providing it with lethal weapons. City of Khan Yunis has been among the prime targets of Israeli airstrikes this morning. Palestinians there described the situation that they are facing due to relentless air attacks.
They are terrorists. We know that their intention is killing and destroying our homes. What did they achieve with all this other than killing children? They have killed women, destroyed homes, and are wreaking corruption on the world. They cut off our water, our electricity.
What is this criminality? What is this terrorism? We don't do anything. We have a religion. We have Islam. We don't think of that stuff at all. We're not criminals. We're not terrorists. We just want to live in safety and want our children to feel safe.
Biden, this is all Biden. Biden is responsible for all of this. How do you sleep while children are dying?
What is it exactly? It is just a house where civilians fled from another area are staying. They're all young and children. Let all those Arab countries keep their weapons, tanks, and planes. We don't want anything from them.
President of the international charity group Doctors Without Borders has recently visited Palestinian territories. He says the situation in Gaza is unimaginable and inhumane.
For 7 weeks, we saw simply that the Israeli forces were killing people, children, entire families. And they are doing it wantonly. People trying to escape unpredictable bombardment, trying to find safety in a place where nowhere was safe. And now, over 1.7 million people are displaced, and they are living in the most cramped, chaotic, horrific conditions. This is unimaginable. This is inhumane. The situation today in Gaza, as you all are aware of, is catastrophic. It has gone beyond the what we call humanitarian crisis. It is a humanitarian catastrophe. At last count, nearly three quarters of the hospitals in the Gaza Strip are not functioning. Almost none in northern Gaza are functioning. And systematic attacks have destroyed the healthcare system. This brutal annihilation of an entire population's health system stretches beyond what humanitarian aid can fix. I have to make it very clear, doctors cannot stop bombs. We are already witnessing a humanitarian crisis with catastrophic proportions, and it will get worse if this violent onslaught resumes. People in Gaza need a sustained ceasefire now, and it is the only way to stop indiscriminate killings and civilian injuries and allow for the delivery of all this desperately needed humanitarian aid on a meaningful scale.
The boycott campaign targeting pro-Israeli products is reshaping the business landscape in Pakistan. In response to widespread calls for boycott, companies affiliated with the U.S. and Israel are compelled to make swift strategic adjustments to align with evolving consumer sentiments. Our correspondent Nasir Kazmi brings us more on the issue from the capital, Islamabad.
The ongoing boycott campaign against pro-Israeli products has set in motion a transformative period for Western businesses in Pakistan. Faced with a resounding call for boycott, pro-U.S. and pro-Israeli companies find themselves compelled to make strategic adjustments. In response, these outlets have slashed their product prices by up to 50%, a desperate measure to bring customers back to their shops. However, the people of Pakistan remain steadfast in their commitment to uphold the boycott as a demonstration of solidarity with the oppressed communities in Gaza.
बायकॉट करना चाहिए क्यों?
आई एम फुली बिहाइंड द बायकॉट अगेंस्ट प्रो यूएस एंड प्रो इजरायली कंपनीज. इट्स हार्ट ब्रेकिंग टू विटनेस द ऑनगोइंग वॉर क्राइम्स इन गाजा. And it's time we use our consumer power to send a strong message.
The people of Pakistan vowed to continue their boycott campaign till the complete ceasefire in Gaza.
Boycott zarur karna chahiye jo Palestine ke khilaf hain.
These companies need to be held accountable for their affiliations with the US and Israel, and our collective stand can make a real difference.
The boycott has cast a shadow over the sales of superstores selling Western products in Pakistan, prompting a strategic shift in their offerings, giving more prominence to locally sourced items.
In response to intense boycott pressure, pro-Israeli companies are offering substantial discounts as a strategic move to regain customer trust after aligning with the US and Israel. This shows the complex interactions between geopolitical developments, consumer behavior, and national socio-political structures. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Depleted uranium made a spectacular entrance on the battlefront in 1991. During the first Persian Gulf War, bombs and shells made with this high-density metal annihilated Saddam Hussein's tanks. And since then, the U.S. military have regarded depleted uranium munitions as the magic weapon. For those who use it, depleted uranium is beyond reproach. But others say it is a deadly poison. So who's right and who's wrong? Many countries possess weapons based on depleted uranium, and experimentation has been rife. But the consequences for civilians and the military alike have been dramatic. Today's documentary, Depleted Uranium, a Very Presentable Killer, compares and contrasts the arguments of those who defend and attack a technology that is highly toxic. Stay with us for the first part.
It's a wonderful weapon. Depleted uranium is a very dense, hard metal. And you put it on the end of a bullet, or you put it on the end of a shell, and it'll go through a tank and go through the second tank. I mean, it's wonderful from a military standpoint.
Based on the fact that certain armies around the world are developing new armor plating capabilities, which can't be pierced other than by depleted uranium munitions, it's quite normal to conserve a high-level operational capability that the French army envisages equipping its Leclerc tanks with this type of munitions.
I was trying to say, hey, guys, you may be creating a problem. I have been very careful not to accuse because, you know, j'accuse is a pretty strong thing to say to somebody.
My name is Jacques Charmelot. I've been a journalist for 30 years. I've covered conflicts in Africa, Iran, Lebanon, Iraq, and in the Balkans. And I've worked in Washington, a secret and powerful city. On July the 4th, 2012, I'm in America's federal capital. I'm in the crowd attending the Independence Day parade. But my thoughts are elsewhere. I'm back from a battleground that the American soldiers have just left, Iraq. Barack Obama has put an end to more than 20 years of war-torn confrontation between the US and this distant country. But what I saw there is indelibly etched on my memory. Depleted uranium begins in Iraq. Iraq has been subjected to more than 50 years of revolutions, dictatorships, and wars. And it's trying with all its might to be reborn. But its poisoned past weighs heavy on the fate of 30 million Iraqi citizens. My investigation begins in Basra, a huge port caught between Iran, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia. In February 1991, it is at the heart of the international offensive to drive Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. Iraqi tanks want to leave the small emirate, but American planes, masters of guise, are waiting for them. I head for the scene of the Iraqi rout.
I took part in the war in Kuwait against the American forces.
Could you tell us about leaving Kuwait? How it happened for you?
I fought in the war up to the very end until the Iraqi army retreated, but it wasn't so much a retreat as every man for himself. The road was exposed and the planes bombarded our military forces. That was the situation with our tanks. The road was open and straight, and it was very easy for the Americans to bomb our tanks. It was this the road of death.
The final battle in the war lasted just 10 hours. Hundreds of tanks and vehicles were blown into shreds and abandoned in the desert. Much later, an official American document explains why the success was so devastating. On the road of death, American pilots used a newcomer to their weaponry arsenal. They fired thousands of rounds containing at least 320 tons of depleted uranium. The rounds are equipped with a depleted uranium arrowhead penetrator, which can pierce any armor plating. They catch fire on impact, reaching over 1,000 degrees, igniting the target and emitting a cloud of fine dust. They are real tank killers. Four countries are the main producers: the United States, Russia, China, and France. Natural uranium is used in numerous countries. Once enriched, it becomes highly radioactive and is used in atomic weapons and nuclear power stations. The residue of the enrichment process is called depleted uranium. It is weakly radioactive, but is not degradable. It has to be securely stored or recycled. 50,000 tons are produced around the world every year. In Basra, depleted uranium is accused of leaving a terrible legacy. I head for the city's central hospital.
Are you being treated?
Yes, I'm still being treated. Until God takes my soul. They diagnosed cancer in my pancreas and then my liver. You know, the countries that started the wars don't come to help us. They poured their poison on us and then they went away.
In 1991, the first Gulf War started, and at that time I was here on a duty at night duty, when the airplanes, fighters and bombs. After that, by many years, 3 or 4 years, we start to see many cases of cancer, particularly in this hospital. If we compare it to the 80s or 90s, we found there is an increase of, say, fourfold. 1996, somebody came here with a delegation, escorting a delegation. He's from the security, and he knows about the problem. And he told me, "Doctor, you know that we are under the effects of depleted uranium, which is used by the American." Yeah, he just whispered into my ear that we got this problem. And so we start to have a link between the use of depleted uranium and the increased cancer rates. You know, now we have what we call a cancer phobia here among people. Everybody who got a mass, they think that we got a cancer.
Even before Dr. Jawad Al-Ali learnt about the dangers of depleted uranium, in 1995, the Americans produced a film alerting its own soldiers to the risks involved with the heavy metal.
Battlefields and fighting are by nature hazardous to your health. Some hazards are easy to identify and well understood. Soldiers recognize the serious hazards presented by incoming artillery shells and bullets and take appropriate actions. However, some lesser hazards from new technological applications are not so well known and recognized. One of these newer applications is the use of depleted uranium in munitions and equipment armor.
The film fixes three safety rules for dealing with potential depleted uranium contamination. Get away as far as possible, as quickly as possible, and avoid any exposure to the skin. Three rules that were impossible to respect in Basra. I discover one of the tank cemeteries that abound throughout the city. There are thousands of tons of debris, some of which contaminated by depleted uranium dust, have been accessible to the population here for 20 years. I'll ask the head of the Environment Ministry why such dangerous metal wasn't removed to safety.
After 1991, we had a full report on the sites and their effects. There was no department to deal with it. Every time we found a piece of contaminated metal, we identified it with a red or yellow tag. Before 2003, we put a notice, "Danger, contaminated fragment, do not approach." Shortly after, we'd return to the same place and the notices would have disappeared and we'd find them somewhere else. Even if we deemed it important at the time, it was only relatively important, as the situation was very complex and local authorities had other concerns. Why did the Americans from 2003 and even since 1991 not remove or displace the metal waste? They did nothing at the time. The likely reason, in my view, is that they hadn't yet measured the effects of using this weaponry. They wanted to see the results and the effects after 5, 10, and 15 years, etc. God will decide. But the munitions they used against us will have effects on our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren for generations to come, probably until the end of time.
During the invasion of Kuwait, Paris was a faithful ally of the USA, and French troops played a crucial role. I contact journalist Marie-Claude Dubin, who was at the front line.
There was a tank which looked all burnt up. And I said, "Can I go inside? It's not mine." No, it's not mine. You can go in." I raised up clouds of dust, and I never imagined that the ashes were mixed with depleted uranium dust.
What illness are you suffering from?
An autoimmune disease. I've been told it attacks the nerves, muscles, the thyroid, plus certain neurocognitive problems, neuromuscular lesions.
To get a clearer picture of what happened to Marie-Claude Dubin and to patients in the Basra hospital, I go to Valence to see a scientist. For years, Roland Desbordes has been speaking out against the risks of depleted uranium. He's the president of CRIRAD.
We know that depleted uranium is pyrophoric, which means that it ignites spontaneously in the air, with the oxygen in the air. A flameless combustion, but with oxidization, producing uranium oxide, which is an extremely fine dust that's released into the air. You can then be contaminated internally, either through inhalation, if you're not wearing a mask, or by ingestion, because it'll be on your fingers. The uranium combines many risks, but why? Because it's an alpha emitter, and alpha radiation is what causes the most internal damage. Secondly, because it's a heavy metal, and we retain it. It metabolizes within the organism for many long years. For it to lose half its radioactivity, it takes 4.5 billion years.
4.5 billion years is the same age as planet Earth. These concerns over the harmful effects of depleted uranium dust are shared by official scientific bodies.
The problem is, in the case of internal contamination, either you ingest it because you're in a contaminated environment and it can be found in the water and in food, or you inhale and the particles of depleted uranium reach your lungs. There are two phases to this. Firstly, the uranium particles have to be dissolved to get into the blood, and once they're in the bloodstream, they'll be distributed among the various organs. Once in the organs, either it builds up or doesn't.
We often refer to the case of the Iraqi children who play in the tanks that were destroyed and who collect the scrap metal and cut it up, or housewives who sometimes recycle the metal to make pots that they'll subsequently cook in. Do you think there's a risk?
There are potential effects, especially if there's repeated exposure, even if it's not chronic. And this will be the case. Children come to play, water is cooked in the pots. With ingestion, with repeated administration within the body, even if you only have weak doses, the fact of accumulating the various doses can ultimately have an effect on health.
Clearly, the depleted uranium dust falls down, and it settles.
Yes. Once it falls, obviously the ground will be contaminated. Afterwards, it depends on how this contamination comes about, if it's very localized or not, and whether it's in towns or in fields which will be cultivated. So there will definitely be a contamination of the environment.
Things are becoming clearer to me, and more worrying. The depleted uranium particles are dangerous for health and for nature. The career of depleted uranium munitions began in Iraq, but it continued in the heart of Europe, just a few hours by air from capital cities like Paris, Rome, and Berlin. I walk among the graves in the Jewish cemetery in Sarajevo. It was from here that Serbian snipers kept the besieged city locked down. The journalists, who like myself, came to cover the conflict, often found themselves behind the yellow walls of the Holiday Inn. In 1992, divisions in Yugoslavia forced Bosnia into a war. In April, the inhabitants of Sarajevo were trapped. The UN launched an impossible mission to reconcile Muslims, Serbs, and Croats. But the war dragged on, and in 1995, NATO intervened. NATO planes, mostly American, bombed the Serbs, who were forced to make peace. The Sniper Alley tramway takes me to Hadići, a suburb on the outskirts of Sarajevo. I enter a ruined factory, a key element in the Serbs' military industry. Tanks and cannons were repaired here. NATO planes attacked the Hadići factory seven times in September 1995. And fired more than 4,000 depleted uranium shells. When When peace was reinstated, many Serbs from Hadice moved to Bratunac, a Serbian republic town in eastern Bosnia. They went there to live and also to die. Nedeljko Zelenović is a journalist and a witness. He has investigated the NATO bombings. His father, uncle, cousins, and dozens of friends worked in the Hadice factory.
All the workers who worked on the assembly lines at the time, who were caught in the fighting, and later at the time I was following events, they all died from various forms of cancer. In 1996, the population of Bratunac was between 20 and 22,000 people, and less than 5% of them came from Hadice. That year, in 1996, 154 people were buried in the Bratunac municipal cemetery. 3% of them came from Hadice. But in 2000, 105 people were buried in Bratunac, and 50% of them came from Hadice. I have a few names if you're interested.
Jerić Budimir, Andrić Drago, Mastilo Dušan, Banduka Milinko, Banduka Danilo, Aleksić Nenad, Makajić Simo, Stanojević Relja, Puša Ramoni, Turuntaš Ljubica, Lavušić Gospa, Udrić.
What did your son die of?
He was diagnosed with leukemia. I asked what it was caused by, and they told me it was due to depleted uranium.
Mehmed Telalevic is a Muslim. During the war, he fled Hadice, driven out by the Serbs. In 1996, he returned home, close to the ruins of the arms factory. He found his house blown apart by bombs. Mehmed rebuilt it, not suspecting that the land around it had been contaminated by poisonous dust.
We were never told. Nobody ever said anything. The public at large can't even be aware of it, as this disease is really a lottery. You put up with it, you fight it, and you might live or die. I know at least 10 people here, all young, aged between 35 and 40. They all have a cancer.
Mehmet tells me that he discovered he had colon cancer in 2004. He's taken chemotherapy and is now in remission. But the news is not good. The latest tests revealed that his prostate is 4 times bigger than normal. He has blood in his urine.
I've become fragile. Before, I could take normal showers. But now I have to have very, very hot showers. I have to wear leggings. I'm cold all the time. I'm delicate. My blood is anemic. I've no immunity.
Are you sure all this is because of the factory?
Oh, yes, I'm 100% certain. There are no other diseases here apart from cancer.
I pursue the depleted uranium trail in Italy. A great ally of the USA within NATO, the country organized humanitarian missions in Bosnia. It later sent a strong contingent to separate Serbs and Albanians in Kosovo. And it was in Italy that the dangers of depleted uranium weapons were widely exposed in late 1999. In Rome, I meet another Italian soldier who'd been sent to the Balkans, Colonel Americo Lacetti.
So it began in 1999. I came back in 1999, and on December 24th, I had an X-ray. I remember I was alone with the technician. There was nobody at the hospital. When I asked him what I had, he said, "What have you got?" And then he said, enjoy Christmas because you won't be here next year. I had this lump 24 centimeters long, 14 centimeters wide and 12 centimeters thick. A tumor in my lungs. After that, I had other tests, and they took a piece of the tumor and examined it. Inside were numerous ceramic particles, perfectly round. And they contained a load of substances that don't exist naturally. But they do exist when a depleted uranium projectile strikes a hard surface. This produces a cloud of dust, which when you inhale it, creates this type of pathology. I'm now living in a body that's mined.
As the death toll builds in Italy, the public is outraged, and the government has to act. On January the 3rd, 2001, the Prime Minister, Giuliano Amato, breaks the official silence and announces that he is going to demand a full account from NATO. But this demand will have little effect.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters. 9,650 kilohertz every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is for a better life.
Farmud bo'istu.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program For a Better Life, and I am Bita. I have opportunity and chance and honor to be at your service. In this episode, actually following all of the things that we talked in the last episodes, that we were talking about the miracle of Holy Quran, different aspects of this miracle, we get to this point of the miracle of logic and conviction that we can see through this holy book. Basically, the Quran is a book of preaching aimed at all people in order to convince them in its message. So, the Quranic way of preaching starts by subtlety. To realize this, one must study the Arabic language before one can respond fully to its appeal. However, the translation or interpretations available in English or other languages should suffice for a limited purpose. The Quran has a style which is absolutely unique, and as I told you, we call Quran as a living miracle, miracle of all time and all decades. The variety of topics, even in one page, fascinates every reader. The book is read again and again, and still the burning desire in the hearts of the believers ever increases. How do you disbelieve in Allah, seeing you were dead and He gave you life? Then He shall make you dead, then He shall give you life again. The argument is simple, but strong, clear but deep, and truly convincing. One of the beauties that we can see by researching the Holy Quran is that all of the verses are just really short, brief, but at the same time, really strong and deep. You know, you read some simple words together, and the effect of these words on you will last for a long, long time. Like, you feel like something has changed in your soul. That I myself call it as a soul purification that you can go through by reciting the Holy Quran. And the example that I recited for you was one of the most beautiful example in verses in Holy Quran that reminds you that you were created by Allah Almighty. Allah Almighty is creator of you. Then Allah Almighty knows you better than you know yourself. So let's keep it here. We're going to go for a short break and then I'm going to come back. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, Your love is all I need. 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 Oh, 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 oh.
Your love is all I need. To be all I need. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to For a Better Life. So we were talking about this aspect of logic and conviction of Holy Quran, which there is a beautiful argument in every verse, and in a brief and short way, but still deeply and strongly will affect your soul. So people possess the power of reasoning, which helps them to arrive at some useful observations and conclusions. The world surrounding them is the first thing to actually impinge upon their sight and engross their attention. The sun, stars, moon, water, animals, and air usually put people into a state of meditation. So, such as remember Allah, have productive thinking which results in glorifying the Lord. In the process of their thought, they enjoy a glimpse of the meaning and purpose of the creation. Then they admit that this world is not created in vain and beg Allah for forgiveness and mercy. So behold the marks of Allah's mercy, how He quickens the earth after it was dead. Surely He is the quickener of the dead, and He is powerful over everything. Life is given to us as an act of grace, and we ought to be grateful. And Allah reminds of that. Then He actually tells of the Day of Judgment and portrays vividly His capacity to create. So one of the ways, one of the beautiful ways that we go through in order to understand the capability of Allah Almighty in creating us, is thinking about our goal of creation, which is a difficult task because our brain is limited, as knowledge is limited, and digging through this beautiful question, what is the goal of me being here? Why am I here? Why am I living? All of these questions, that answering these questions actually needs expertise personally, this trying and going into this road of searching for knowledge is enough for me. And the point is, knowing all of these aspects will help you to touch more the verses of Holy Quran. And why is it like that? It's because the Holy Quran is the language of Allah Almighty, and Allah Almighty is your creator, the one who by his demand you are here, and you may not again by his demand. So your creator is talking to you. What can be more beautiful, more touching than this sentence that your Lord is talking to you? And you know, we don't have any other book which is the true speech of Allah Almighty to his servant. And the Holy Quran is the only guideline that we have nowadays. So don't forget, don't neglect, and don't ignore this blessing that we have specifically as Muslims. And let's go for a short break, then we're gonna come back. Welcome back to Arab English Radio. This is For a Better Life. This is the last part of today's episode. And to wrap up the things that we discussed up to here, I'm going to talk more about the blessing of being existed. Okay? Sometimes we forget the mere and the first blessing that we have. We are here as a human being, and this is only and only by the demand of Allah Almighty, our Creator. And sometimes I wonder how this human being can be forgetful, can forget all the blessings that Allah Almighty put on his way and is putting again and again and again. Like health, like your food, hand, like the nature, like sky, whatever, wherever you look at, there is a sign of Allah Almighty there. So don't forget, the goal here is finding your goal of being here. And, you know, in the school and somewhere like that, we were facing some actually cliches, like we are here to obey Allah Almighty, to be his servants, and so on. Yes, we are here to be his servants, but don't forget that Allah Almighty is the source of love spread on the world and the earth. So keep that love in your heart and share it with other people, share it with yourself, and enjoy every blessing Allah Almighty gave you, and be thankful. Thank you for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode. And I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash. Share, he knows. Allah knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip for a second day after the end of its week-long truce with the Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas. Hamas says Israel has resumed its war on Gaza with the U.S. green light as renewed bombings kill nearly 240 Palestinians. And thousands of protesters take to the streets in towns and cities throughout the world in a strong show of solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. Hello and welcome to World News. Our top story, Israel continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip for a second day after the end of its week-long truce with the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Fresh Israeli strikes have targeted residential buildings as well as areas where Palestinians are taking shelter. Israeli warplanes and tanks have attacked over 400 targets, including a refugee.